Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. Well, we will get started on today's episode, which will be part two of my conversation with Adele Shaw. If you haven't listened to part one already, then you will be able to locate it as the previous episode to this one in your podcast app. But even if you have listened to it, we'll just start off again with Adele's bio before we jump in. Adele Shaw is a certified horse behavior consultant through the IAABC and an internationally recognized mentor and trainer focused on creating a positive relationship between horse and human through science-based training and care practices. Drawn to horses labeled as troublemakers and lost causes from an early age, Adele has always had a passion for understanding the why behind behavior and a deep desire to help horses find their way back to wellness. This holistic approach examines the horse's environment, lifestyle, and physical and mental soundness to ensure that the horses are not simply surviving, but truly thriving in their life and relationship with their human caretakers. As a teacher, Adele is supportive and understanding of both horse and human, and tailors her lessons to provide the most personalized, accessible, and ethically minded coaching possible. Her approach goes beyond method by offering flexible training and care systems. The well-being of the horse and the empowerment of the student always remain the primary goals. In addition to her hands-on work with specialized rehabilitation cases at her ranch in Texas, Adele maintains an active role in the equestrian community through her clinics, online student programs, blog, podcast, and social media outreach. As she connects with students across the globe, Adele remains dedicated to making information on behavioral science, positive reinforcement, Lima principles, humane hierarchy, and species-appropriate care practices accessible and achievable for every horse owner through the willing equine. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome back for part two, Adele Shaw, who is once again patiently waiting by after dropping the kids off. Adele, thank you so much for taking the time to come back and hang out with us again at Animal Training Academy.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be back for part two.
Happy New Year's.
Oh, thank you. You too.
It's exciting to be finished 2020.
Yeah, I think we're all very optimistic going into 2021, but I'm a little bit like, we'll see how it goes. We're going to roll with it. We're going to go with the flow.
And this is our first podcast recording for 2021 from Animal Training Academy. And did you get some time off? I relaxed for 12 days. I don't know if you can relax with a 9-month-old baby, but I was away from the computer for 12 days, sorry, anyway, and feeling good and relaxed. How about you? What was your...
I took a whole month off, which what? It's crazy. It's unheard of. I call it being off. It's kind of, I went behind the scenes a little bit. So I worked more on just some of the projects that had gotten really left behind in the chaos and just stuff, you know, planning for 2021, just behind the scenes business development type stuff. And, but it was, I would say I was running at about 40 or 50%, you know, level for myself personally. And it felt really good to have that much time to just like rest and restore and reset for the new year. And spend time with my family. I'd been really missing my kids. It had just been chaos. So That was my most of December was at that, and then the very early of January was spent in that kind of behind the scenes taking a break. So yes, it was very nice.
No one can see you because it's obviously a audio recording, but I feel you look more relaxed than you did last year. I mean, we spoke in December, like the crux of like the mayhem.
Yeah, I think it took, let's see, so I had a whole month off, but I think it took probably 3 weeks to really recover. And I did most of it to myself. I'm not going to blame this year on it. I tend to go a little intense and then realize I went a little intense and take a big step back. And so, it was very restorative or whatever word you want to use, and just allowed me to kind of like go into 2021 more focused and with a plan. And I'm not just like putting out fires left and right and just kind of, I don't know, I felt like 2020 ran away with me. So I'm hoping 2021 I can stay on top of a little bit better. We'll see.
Yeah, well, and me and my wife talk about the stress of just change with a 9-month-old coming in. But I think the other thing we forgot, wife and I, and I wonder if it's true for others as well, is a pandemic's always been there, you know, like this stress of like uncertainty, like you never know what's about to happen, and I just want to pay tribute, it's a horrible way of saying it, but just acknowledge that was there, like, and it's still there.
Well, I feel like for me, I think for a lot of people, we dealt with a lot of, you know, for myself, I'll talk about myself, but I feel like this kind of relates to a lot of people. Like trigger stacking happened in 2020. As far as we've got the pandemic, we've got political issues, we've got elections here in the US, we've got, you know, all of that. And then for me, I hit September and I lost my heart horse in September. And that was kind of like this, it was the last straw. Like it was this huge trigger. I'd gone above threshold, like I was lost at that point and I just crashed and burned. And so, starting in September was when I really was like, I have to take a huge step back. But unfortunately, I had like 2 more months of commitments I had already signed up for. So I just did the best I could to get through September and October and November. And then I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done for December. I'm just taking a step back. I'm just going to be mom for December. And that was very helpful. So yeah, I was very... I was reminded of what it's like for our animal learners and for people, everybody around me and stuff. It's not always front and center what is the true cause of everything that's building up, right? You just happen to see the last thing that caused the big, you know, the big overflow of the behavior, like the aggression, the fear, all of that. Just that's, you're saying the last straw most of the time. And there's so much else that's running under the surface for that human, for that animal, it doesn't matter. But for me, that was, it happened in September. So
wow.
Yeah, I needed December.
That's a good way of putting it. I mean, we started our holiday off and I found this program, I think it was on Netflix. I can't remember his name, but he's ethnicity of an Indian American who travels around the world asking big questions.
So okay.
He went to South Korea with and asked what it means to like overwork, because they have quite a strong culture there of kind of dedicating yourself. From what my understanding of what he was portraying in this program, of dedicating yourself to your job.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, explored the mental health side effects of that, and suicide was one of them. Mm-hmm. early death, and I watched that at the start of 12 days off, and I just broke down. I was like, oh my god, like you know, I kind of resonated with some of it because I'd worked so hard in 2020 and tried to manage everything. So
I feel like we pretty much hit a similar. We were talking about this before part one, when we first met to talk about doing these recordings, that just, I felt like we both were very much in that similar place where we were coming to the end of the year. We were just like, okay, we're fried. We're fried right now. We need to recover.
We've had that restorative period. We're unfried.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun recording part one. And our original plan was to just do the single episode. But then, as evident from the start of this episode, we just got chatting. And we talked about the growth mindset last time and we didn't really stop. So here we are again because you've agreed to do something a little bit hard today.
Okay.
And I appreciate it.
I think so. What have I agreed to? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I just want to start off with appreciating that for this episode, you're going to be making yourself somewhat vulnerable and consequently bravely sharing with us events and stories that are still fresh and understandably painful.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned that recently you had to say goodbye to Tiger, a horse, not an actual tiger, but a horse.
No. Her, if it puts it in perspective, her full name is Tigress. So, and I call her Tiger. Well, actually, originally it was Tiger Lily, and then we changed it to Tigress, and then I just call her Tiger. So,
that's right. I call my Tiger horse, so it makes sense.
Okay, there you go.
But you shared a lot of time with this animal, and imagining a lot of learning together as well. Mm. And I'm grateful that today, in part two, we get to honour Tiger and your journey together. And we discussed you sharing with us five ways that your positive reinforcement journey with Tiger shaped your life. Mm. But before we do, maybe just backtrack a little bit and share with everyone who was Tiger. And why was this particular learner, or why did this particular learner have such a special place in your heart?
Well, who was Tiger? So, all right, the goal is not to choke up during this episode. Okay, so Tiger came into my life at a very interesting, like, crossroad type point. I was a relatively new mom. I had grown up really working with horses and other animals in a very traditional sense with, you know, I use crops, I use whips, bits, spurs, pressure and release, you know, punishment, lots of punishment. And I had repeatedly experienced times where these approaches had some fallout, but I didn't really recognize them. Well, some or a lot of fallout, but I didn't really recognize the fallout for what it was. I attributed it to other things. Mostly I blamed the horse for the fallout. So, or I blame myself sometimes that I just wasn't good enough trainer or whatever it was. So I just happened to be at a interesting point in my path, my horsemanship journey. And then I had just lost back to back two very special horses to me. But they, a little bit different relationship with those horses. And it was more of the loss of what they offered me in that I lost my horse I could ride. I lost my colt I was training, and there goes all that hard work I just put into that animal. And so I was kind of just like, why do I even do, you know, this whole horse thing and animal training? And so you had decided to take a break, which I briefly talked about in the previous episode, which didn't last long, lasted 5 days. And I was out horse shopping with my family, and I just literally from across the whole ranch, I see this buckskin mare, and my heart just knew. I can't give you words for what it was. It was love at first sight. I saw her. We weren't there to see her, and I asked they were horse traders. I asked them, what that horse was. And they said, well, she's not what you're looking for. And I said, doesn't matter, just bring her up. And so she didn't have a name. They hadn't given her a name. They had only started her under saddle a little bit, and she had a habit of rearing under saddle. But for whatever reason, I just ignored that and was like, she's getting on my trailer and coming home with me. So, I brought Tiger home and I started working with her kind of I would say that my mindset at the time was fairly arrogant. I don't know. I just assumed that I could fix this behavior. Like, this was not a big deal. They probably just didn't fit her saddle right, or they were feeding her too hot, or whatever it was. And, within, I don't know how long it took, but within a month or so, I realized that I was way in over my head. As far as what I knew up to that point was not going to fix this horse, but I kept going. I kept going with everything I knew. All the natural horsemanship years, all the traditional training, the competitive training, all of that, I was putting it into fully into this horse, and I was trying to work with her. And she was a very interesting horse compared to past horses I've had, in that she would not, could not, I don't know exactly what was happening mentally with her, but she wouldn't shut down. Like most of the horses that, if I look back at the horses I had worked with, at some point you could suppress the behavior and get them to just stop fighting back, and you would have a trained horse. Not with her though. Actually things just kept getting worse, and there was these weird changes, or weird things to me at the time that she would do that I had never noticed in another horse before. She had nervous twitches, like in her face. She would get these weird nervous twitches I had never seen in another horse before. She also had the most rigid muscles, and her whole physical being was just like, she was constantly terrified, basically. So just imagine what happens with your own physical body when you're scared and you're just in freeze mode, or running for your life. That was how she lived her whole life all the time at that point. And I had never really worked with a horse that was quite in that mindset or in a physical state like that. So it was really hard for me to figure out what to do. And also she really pulled out that, sympathy, empathy. I don't know. I was seeing her respond in a way I'd never seen another horse, and it pulled out this level of compassion that I probably didn't understand before. I didn't know. I'm not exactly sure, but I couldn't keep doing to her what I had done to every other horse because of how she responded. It was visibly traumatizing to her, and she was very clear about it. So it made me start searching for other options. And throughout our journey from that point forward, once, you know, I don't know how much you want me to go into in this episode, but how I had discovered positive reinforcement, that's how I started working with her. And it started to make a big impact in our relationship after a little bit of a rocky start. She, throughout the rest of the years that we worked together, was always so clear with me. She was very expressive. She never hid anything. I mean, I could see her from across the pasture and see the way her eyes looked, and I would know exactly what was going on. And she just is and still is one of the most, or that I've met. She passed away in September, but one of the most expressive horses I've ever met, and just brought out something different in me and pushed me to try something different because of how expressive she was and how visibly, you know, how much she expressed just what she was feeling. So I think I know that's a big part of what caused me to start looking for something different, because I couldn't continue to do to her what I had done to other horses, because in my mind I had dismissed or been okay with some of the training approaches I'd used in the past, because eventually the horses were, you know, quote, okay with it, as they just dealt with it. But for her, we never got to that point, and I couldn't get her to that point. And to get her to that point would have absolutely, you know, I think most rational people would have categorized it as abuse, to make that happen. So, yeah, so that's kind of, if I'm going to put like in a nutshell, she was just like very, very sensitive, very honest. Like, I don't like the word honest, because it's a word that's used in the horse world quite a bit. It's an honest horse or whatever. All that means is that the horse is doesn't do, you know, dirty bucks or pull out of fences, things like that. But to me, kind of what I meant by that was you saw what you saw. There was no hiding it. There was no, there was always warnings like way, 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 way before. Actually, I have a very distinct memory. So this would have been late October, and I have a video. And, you know, I've had this mare at this point. I'm trying to remember how many years she's been with me at this point. I'd have to look it up actually. But many years, it was probably like 8 years. And she was still teaching me, like, it was probably the week before she passed away. We were working on introducing a rider during a certain movement, and I was on the ground and I had one of my interns on her, and she was doing a tongue out lick, which has been like licking and chewing where they push their tongue out of their mouth. And that has been noted to be a sign of stress or a calming signal. And for whatever reason, I hadn't really picked up on it earlier. And then I had this moment of clarity with her, and she was expressing it back to back. And it was so subtle. It was so subtle. But to the point of that was, to the very last days, she was teaching me how subtle communication is, especially with horses, how it can just be the way the eyes look. It can just be whether or not the tongue is coming out of the mouth. It can just be whether they swish their tail an extra time. And she was teaching me that for years, and it got more and more refined. She was just teaching me and bringing me along. And so really refined my eye and my ability to just feel what the horses were feeling as best to my abilities. And she has been one of my greatest teachers along this path in that sense, and really helped just take me down this positive reinforcement, but not just positive reinforcement, but just the whole horsemanship journey, and as including like just how we care for them, how we treat them on a daily basis, just spending time with them, how they're fed, just everything with the training and their whole lifestyle and our relationships. So not sure if that answers that question, but that's kind of,
I'm just thinking like from my lens, having not spent as much time or anywhere near anywhere close to as much time working with horses as you, that a lot of horses kind of learn their behavior doesn't have function, so they stop trying, whilst it seems that Tiger learned that her behavior did have function, but the behaviors she was throwing out were so intense that she was a beautiful example of behavior being a study of one. She didn't get to that stage where she stopped trying to influence her environment.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think what was unique about her is that, you know, again, we have individual horses and they have individual learning histories and genetics and all that. I don't know exactly what caused it to be this way for her, but I got more than one horse from the same place, the same horse trader, and they had different responses to the same type of training. So some of them coped, you know, in a not necessarily healthy way, but they were coping with it. They weren't dangerous to be around and they seemed to be relatively healthy. And then there was Tiger, who was just not coping well. She was not coping well, and she wasn't, just a lot of horses will at some point shut down and go into that learned helplessness, tonic immobility, like all of that. But there seems to be a fairly common, you know, there's a range of at what point will a horse go into that state. And she was more resistant to going into that state. And she was very much still operating on her environment. And she was still very much expressing her behavior. And I'm so grateful to her and grateful for that experience to be able to work with her and learn from that experience. Because it can be really challenging when you do have a horse that has learned that their behavior doesn't have a result. They just need to, you know, shut up and deal with it. They just need to like sit there and cope with it. It can be challenging to help them come out of that and to learn again that they can express how they're feeling and they can operate on their environment and they can, their behavior has function around people. But on the flip side, you have horses like Tiger who are they're choosing to, I talk about it as like, they're like screaming at you. They're just yelling at you that something is wrong. And that can also be really challenging, especially for handlers that are less experienced with horses, allowing them to be expressive like that. So with positive reinforcement and cooperative care and all of that, when you grow up in a culture that is very much centered on suppressing all of that, and then you start to learn that it's actually okay, and then you start to work with these horses that are yelling at you, it can be overwhelming and scary. And so I was definitely in that situation many times, especially in the beginning, where I was scared of her because she was yelling at me and I just wasn't listening. I didn't know how to listen. And that was really because I didn't have that learning history of understanding how to listen to her. So she had to scream at me. and then by the end, it was such a subtle, refined level of communication. And I was able to listen to the subtlest of things. And so, yeah, that whole journey together, she was just teaching me how to listen to whispers, her whispering, and not making her have to yell at me.
I feel like we're thinking the same thing. So, I think it was Chirag Patel who said something along the lines of, sorry, Chirag, I'm going to butcher this so bad. But he said something along the lines of, like, if we listen to their whispers, we don't need to make them scream. Something along those lines. And so you said both of those words in there. Yeah. So I know I get the feeling that you're thinking the same thing. And I kind of got this picture, and I thank Susan Friedman for this one. But she tells me, or she talks about traits, you know, general traits of a species or a breed, and she's helped me visualize those in a bell curve. So in the middle of the bell curve, you've got, you know, most of the individuals, the average point at which a horse, yeah, or any learner might decide that their behavior doesn't have function and enter their learned helplessness stage. But then at the either side of the bell curve, you've got on your left side one that will shut down way sooner. And on the other one, you've got maybe Tiger, who's like right at the end of that bell curve. And I bring this up because it's really important to me, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. It's something that I always teach people, like that is so important, because if you form and become too concrete on strategies that work for those medium horses, then when you come to work with Tiger, you know, Tiger, maybe to use words from your story, if my metaphor makes sense to anyone listening to this, and you, and this actually has any relevance, that animal starts screaming at you, but you did what was required, and then went out and found new ways.
Yeah, I definitely, that is a good way of thinking about that bell curve. There's the center, more average level of, you know, certain responses. We could look at it for anything. In relation to that species, or even I know we can do this a little bit with breeds too, within the species for dogs and horses and stuff. And then there's the individual though. So they can fall on different spectrums. Anyway, I'm butchering my words, but I think, yes, I agree with you. And being able, having Tiger in my life and through the journey that I've been on so far, just really pushed me to quit treating every horse like the same horse. And also it helped the horses though that were, quote, coping with those practices, those methods, whatever I was using before, because yes, they were, you know, again, I'm going to use lots of quotation marks. They were, quote, working, but at what cost to the learner and at what cost to me too. And what was I missing out on? And so it, for me, and this kind of relates back to episode one, I think it was really necessary for me to be pushed to the point where standard practice, what I'd always been doing, no longer works. And it's just not going to work with this horse. She had to scream at me about it, but, or yell, or whatever word we want to use. I was able to take what I learned from her and then go back to these horses that were maybe coping with these other methods and approaches and be like, yeah, but we could make it so much better. Like, why make them deal with that? Sure, Tiger was maybe an extreme for a lot of horses. Maybe a lot of horses are okay. or people are, or it's effective or whatever. But we can make it better. That's not necessarily an excuse to keep using those same approaches.
I feel like the lessons are already significant. I know we've asked you to put together five lessons, but to just get that personal experience from practically being out there with this individual animal and experiencing the contingencies that you and they were together part of. You've offered us from your story the lesson of each animal being an individual and the importance of factoring that into anything you do, because you don't know where on the bell curve that individual animal is going to be. And then learning to, and so that's one thing I've already taken away from your stories, you know, and I don't think I'll ever forget Tiger. You know, every time I teach that now.
she'll be the one that is, yeah, she's the poster child for that.
she might not be referenced by me every time I teach it, but she'll be in my mind, and therefore the conviction I have over the teachings I'm offering, whoever my human learners are, is going to be stronger and hopefully more effective because of examples like the one that you've bravely shared with us today. And then the second lesson I've already taken away from your offering so far is learning to listen to the whispers. I know when you see them in your learners, and you do start listening, and then you experience those contingencies of I'm changing what I'm doing now, when you do that very subtle behavior, and all of a sudden now you want to do more of me because I'm listening to you. I think you spoke with passion in your voice when you talked about that tongue example. And I can think of experiences in my career and working with lots of different animals where kind of those moments have happened, and they've kind of been breakthrough moments, like suddenly, oh, we can communicate now more efficiently.
I think what was strange about that experience is I've known that for a while. It was a two-part learning experience for that. One, I think it was powerful because it was one of my last times I worked with Tiger. But the second part, I think, was, you know, at some point you can work with an animal, a learner, for such a long period of time that you get really comfortable with it, and you're just like, yeah, they do this, and yeah, duh, like this is not a big deal, like we ride, like it's not a big deal. But they're always changing and learning and developing, and I mean, we've got so many factors that play into this. We've got age, we've got just the, with my horses in particular, they don't live with me, so they have the rest of their 24-hour day when I'm not there. So there's a lot happening for that horse when I'm not there. So yes, I had this mare for 8 years, but a good portion of those 8 years were not spent with me just because of the setup and how they live. So there's development happening there. There's the natural progression of the training. I don't know. There's so many different factors that come into play. And I think it can be really easy to get very comfortable with our learner and just kind of run on autopilot. Like, this is what we do. This is how we train. You're comfortable with this. And just to go into each training session with a kind of an assumption that this horse is comfortable with this and this horse is comfortable with this. And as much as I said multiple times that Tiger was very open and expressive with what she felt, there was still onion layers that were happening. There was still unpacking happening. So in the early days, when I would recognize, when she would start going above threshold and stuff, it was when we were doing, you know, or when I would recognize it, I should say. It was during times when, like, I tied her up in the barn and there were no other horses around. Well, that to me now is kind of an obvious, like, that would be a high stress situation for the horse. But at the time, I was just like, she needs to deal with it. She's just being annoying and obnoxious, and she needs to learn some respect and whatever. And so as we got through the years, it was just pulling back onion layers for her and for me, and her learning to trust me too, that I would listen to those subtle things, because I was not perfect by any means during this process. There were many times where we would, I would go into a session with the goal of doing one thing or another, and I would get really frustrated with her that we weren't making progress. And so I might relapse into using using an impatient, like I might use a punisher because I was just impatient. I'm just like, just get this. And it might be something, you know, a common one in the horse world is backing a horse up if they're getting too close to you. It's still a punisher. And, you know, abruptly, I'm not talking about one that's cued and then taught with positive reinforcement. I'm talking about like physically pushing the horse back out of your space, or walking straight into them until they back up, or a lot of times people swing ropes at their chest or things like that. So something like that, I might get really impatient even 6 months, a year, 2 years into our journey, and resort to a punisher or pressure or whatever, and it would break our trust for a while. It would break that, and she would close up a little bit. So she was still expressive. She was still willing to tell me, but it wasn't as fine-tuned. It wasn't as subtle. It was still like, she was like, okay, I need to just deal with this and get through this, because human might turn into Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde here and punish me any minute. So that was something that I was continuing to learn from her, is just more and more subtle communication and longer and longer periods of building trust, building up that bank account, that trust bank account, and getting her to really open up to me and know that she could walk away from me if she needed to. And so at the very, that last kind of lesson that we had together, that training session, I think one of the reasons it stuck so much in my mind, other than the other part, is that I knew that. I knew that tongue out licking was a stress signal. I knew that riding could sometimes be a little bit nerve wracking for her, but I had gone multiple sessions without recognizing it. And it was just this big reminder for me. I'm like, okay, you're getting too comfortable assuming that this horse is okay with what you're asking her to do. And just because she's not showing some big obvious sign of stress. And it's just this very subtle. She just was repeatedly saying, okay, I'm trusting you. I'm doing this, but I'm a little bit uncomfortable here. It's just very, very subtle. And once I saw it, I was like, oh shoot. And we fixed it and it was fine. We made it better. And we had great training session after that. And it wasn't like this big thing. She wasn't bucking. She wasn't rearing. She wasn't, you know, doing all these other things she could have done. It was just very, very subtle. So she was reminding me to the very last minute, just little things, little subtle things. Pay attention. Don't get too comfortable as far as like ignoring me, assuming that I'm just okay with this. So yeah, that could be another of the top five things.
Well, I've never been in a training situation where I got frustrated and then did things that I didn't. Of course, I think everyone in listening to this can think about some situations they've been in that share similarities with what you've just expressed. And obviously, there's going to be people on different stages of knowledge acquisition with regards to the listeners of this podcast show. And I think one of the most poignant word combination that would be called a sentence, right? Sentences that someone said on this podcast was Louise Jinman, when she said punishment starts where knowledge ends. And I think to blend that with what I think you're offering here is that to never get complacent. And I think also relevant that you said that our animals aren't with us all of the time, so of course they're learning all of these things all of the time, and then, you know, the human enters their environment and becomes a salient piece of information all of a sudden, and we're kind of meeting them wherever they're at. So I don't know what my main takeaway from that was, because this would be number three, that Ryan's just saying the takeaways from these stories. But let's not do that. Let's hear your five, because we did ask you to specifically come up with five things. Do you want to, looking at the time, go through those for us?
Man, so I didn't write them down or anything, so I'm going to kind of do these by the seat of my pants here. But the the top five, one being that just listening to those super subtle forms of communication, not making them yell at you, that was something that she drove home early and I learned and was continuing to learn to the very last minute and will still continue to learn, because horses are masters of very rapid and complex forms of communication through body language. They will communicate in 10 different ways simultaneously. And it can actually be very overwhelming to us, because we, you know, our eyes are in front of our head and we're just limited in our body language interpretation skills. And just that's us, how, not how we communicate. But horses, on the other hand, we've got all kinds of body parts moving everywhere and doing stuff. So just listening to those very subtle forms of communication would be the first one. And allowing that to not hold you back, but to empower the training. Because I think early on, I thought that by slowing down that much, by letting, you know, because like, if I were to go back and do it again with the knowledge I have now, I would have taken this horse from, she was riding on trails, she could have jumped for, you know, under saddle, she could do reining pattern, like all of this stuff she could have done. And I would have had to take it all the way back to just in her pasture and me approaching the gate. Like that's how far back she was communicating when I look back, that she was uncomfortable with people and the whole experience altogether. So looking, you know, where I was in the beginning, if somebody had told me that, I would have been like, no, like I need to go ride this horse. Like, well, I'm not just going to not ride her. So it took time for me to accept that that was what was necessary for her. Hence the factor that I kind of restarted her training multiple times with a new motivation to be like, okay, I'm going to listen to the subtlest things. And it was just anytime I had new information, I would just be like, okay, we're going to start over again. Not quite all the way over, but just stepping back. And you know, so, so letting that empower you. So letting, I think if I, now knowing what I know, even if that was necessary, and it oftentimes is, where just approaching the gate is where it needs to stop. Like I can't go any further than that in the training. It would have saved us a lot of ups and downs and hardships and backtracking in our training. And it would have set the tone from the very, very beginning that she had choice and control over the situation. And it would have built our trust up really, really fast, her, you know, trust in me. And, I just feel like it would have gone smoother. So it was very empowering. It is very empowering once you embrace it. And it just strengthens that relationship between you and the horse. And then the unpacking onion layers, pulling back part would be number two, as far as understanding that that is part of the process when you're dealing with a learner that has a lot of, you know, punishment in their history, a lot of trauma around people, just associating people with negative outcomes and everything that has been done to them in the past. Just allowing that process to happen and embracing it and being okay with it and try not to let your ego get in the way. And just realizing that it's going to happen over time. So some horses, and this is I'm speaking from my experience with horses. I'm sure it happens with other species too, but in particular, I notice this happens with horses and that's my primary species I work with. Some horses like Tiger kind of just like dump it all on you. So they're just like, here's who I am. This is how much crap I've had happen to me in my life. And then there are the horses that are more shut down and have learned to cope and shut down their behavior and they're not expressing. Those horses take time. And so just kind of letting that happen and letting them express to you as they're comfortable, is another really big step, something that I learned from her, how powerful that is for the horse to let them unpack all that baggage, unpack all of that history, that learning history, and show you what they're really feeling internally, all this fear and anything else that's going on. So let's see, that's two. Or maybe that was three. I can't even remember. But the third thing I would say is how much, or I would say that Tiger really taught me, is how much I was a learner in this whole situation. Going into my relationship with her, I was the trainer. The horse was the one learning. I had my, you know, stuff together and she didn't. And I had to, you know, make this diamond in the rough a functional being, right? It was very ego driven, very like high and mighty human state of mind. And man, it was a very humbling experience working with her and just continuing every year with her, every day with her. It was repeatedly very humbling in a very good way. It wasn't, I think we often attribute the word humbling to like this really bad feeling, or it's just like you kind of like a kicked dog kind of feeling. And I think humbling, the feeling of being humbled can be a light bulb moment. It could be a moment where you're like, this is something I need to learn. Like, it's okay. I'm a learner right now. And so she, that's something that she really taught me, or, you know, kind of helped me realize, was how much I had to learn and how much it was okay for me to go back to the beginning or earlier stage and be a learner and to allow myself to also unpack and allow myself to also make mistakes and to express how I was feeling and to use my behavior. And so there was a lot of personal healing and growth that happened from that experience with the Tiger. Man, I feel like those were, there were multiple little things inside those big three. If I had to come up with a fourth one, she really drove home the need for a healthy lifestyle and just the overall well-being of the horse, how much it factors into the training. So for me growing up and as a horse trainer, and I think this is prevalent in the horse training community, we get really, really focused on the training. Like, it's the horse goes to their stall, they eat their breakfast and their dinner, and then they come out for training. And the horse, it's almost as if the horse exists for the training. And that's the only thing we really think about is the training. So when's my next ride? What am I going to do during that next ride? How much exercise did the horse get during that ride? Did we do our exercises properly? Did they jump that jump high enough? Like, all of that. And we don't spend enough time thinking about the rest of the 24-hour day, right? We don't think about, you know, how are they getting along with their companions? What's their forage access like? Are they, you know, needs being met? Are the five freedoms being met? Like, all of that stuff. And while that process for me, that learning process had started before Tiger, she really drove that home for me because she was a very different horse when I would try to put her in an environment that wasn't necessarily centered on the equine well-being. So when I would try and put her in a stall, or when I would try and tie her up away from her companions, or just these things, they would make such a huge impact on her behavior. And whether we were in training or not at the time, like whether I was directly interacting with her. So that was another thing that really drove home with Tiger, was how important that is the rest of their 24-hour day, how they're living, how they're interacting and doing, and how they're thriving in their environment, not just surviving. And then for a fifth one, physical comfort. So this was also another thing that really started before Tiger, but she again drove it home for me, how much her physical well-being, so how she felt in her body, in her skin that day, impacted her behavior towards me, towards the rest of the horses, towards just the world, right? There were times I have very distinct memories of one time we had been doing great. Training sessions were going great. Everything was going great. And then all of a sudden things changed. Like, I don't know what happened. It just, well, at the time I didn't. Everything started to fall apart. We weren't having good training sessions. She was more anxious than normal. She wasn't staying focused and she would just walk off. There was all kinds of stuff she was doing that she doesn't normally do. And so I called out the osteopath. I used osteopaths to work on my horses. And we discovered that she had been trying to squeeze herself into this little tiny chute area that I had been feeding a foal through. So it was like a foal pen and it's just a space open that's big enough for a foal to get in. But she'd been trying to get herself in there. And so she had really done some stuff to her ribs. And so her ribs were really painful. And because the osteo touched her ribs in this one spot. And I have never seen this mare try and eat a person, but she lit up and I was like, okay, you hit the spot. That is the thing. And she worked on her for a little while longer, got it fixed up. And we were fine. Like everything was right as rain again. Our training went back to normal. Everything was great. And so she was very, again, expressive. She was very expressive with how she felt. And I have other experiences from her like that too. She had one side of her, because so for non-horse people, horses have to have regular floats. So they have to have dental work and to file down their teeth because they become unbalanced. And she had one very tiny little sharp point in the back of one molar on one side. It was very, very tiny. The dentist was like, I don't even know, when she first did her initial exam before she sedated her and opened up her mouth. She's like, she doesn't seem like she needs much work. And I'm like, just trust me. You just need to do it. She opens up her mouth. She gets it filed down and then Tiger woke up from sedation, everything. And she was a totally different horse again. So it was just those very subtle shifts and changes in her body had a dramatic impact in how she interacted with me and in her environment and how she performed in her training. So that was something that she really drove home for me and has continued to be a very valuable lesson working with other horses that may or may not be as expressive about subtle discomforts. So yeah, I think that was all five.
I like number one, going back to other parts in our conversation and listening to the whispers and your example about riding and then taking it all the way back to when she was at the gate made me think about loopy training and finding that clean loop. And I like that it made me think about that because I've just been watching a training video from Swedish trainer Gabriel, and I can never say her last name. I'm so sorry. Gabriel B from our membership community, and I'm going to share a video in the ATA blog. Maybe before this podcast comes out, so if you want to watch that video you can go to the ATA website and find it there. But she shared a video of her doing healing work with her dog, and there was a lot of what one might label as junk behavior in there, kind of like the dog doing things other than what ideally would happen in between each reinforcer. And so she went back and found the space where there wasn't any of that junk behavior, started there, built the behavior up again, and then it was beautiful. And then that your story made me think about that, and maybe one way that people can learn to listen to the whispers is to listen to your story that you shared about Tiger there and kind of find that space where you have clean loops and you don't have a bunch of behavior happening in between the things you would ideally want to happen. Am I making any sense?
Oh, for sure. Actually, you made me think of a sixth thing, if you don't mind.
No, you can only do five.
Oh, okay.
And that's the end of our podcast, everyone. No, of course. Go. Number six.
Number six would be that was something else that she really, some of our best training sessions, more so than with any other horse, but also it works with them too, is really short sessions. Like, my favorite sessions with her were like 5 minutes tops. Like, that's how long we would work. And we would get those really clean loops. Like, there was no better feeling than when you get a couple of minutes of just this beautiful, flawless, rhythmic, loopy training. And I would walk away from those sessions and I was super happy about him. But I always wondered, I was like, man, we didn't work for very long. And I would come back like a couple days later, even weeks later. And it was so much better as far as like she retained it and it was beautiful. We almost picked up right where we left off versus the many, many, many years prior to that, I would try and just drill and drill and drill and drill behavior. And it was just messy. It was messy all the time. And sometimes she would get it and sometimes she wouldn't. And it just felt like we were constantly having relapses and stuff. And so when I was able to kind of let go of that, well, to put it in perspective, horse people like to ride for like 30 minutes to an hour. So that's how long a normal training session is for a horse person. And when I really feel like horses do best for me personally, in my experience, like 10 minutes or less. And those training sessions where I could keep it really short and sweet and clean, it just felt really good between us and we could come back and it would be really good. And we had less fallout, less relapses. And so that was something else that I really enjoyed learning from her. And she really drove home for me was that, like you said, the loopy training and the clean loops and all of that.
I'm going to try to throw together a bunch of thoughts, so hopefully I can pull them from all of my notes and they make sense.
Okay, sounds good.
But you're speaking my language. Short sessions and recognizing, I think number three was how much of a learner you are, and there's two learners in each situation, our non-human ones and ourselves. But I'm an advocate of those really short sessions. And I think you say what works well for horses is 10 minutes, but I think learners do well in short spurts. As teachers, if we keep it short, my thoughts are that we limit the amount of thinking that we have to do whilst our learners in front of us. Because as soon as we start thinking, then the loops go out the window, right?
Yeah, and I feel like there's more time for us to just start inserting, you know, other behavior so we get less, you know, they're less clean loops for ourselves. So I agree with that. Like I do better with the short sessions too. That's part of the reason I always train in short sessions is because by that, you know, by the time I get to the end of those couple minutes to 10 minutes, I'm like, all right, things are getting sloppy for me. The horse is doing fine. I'm the one that's getting sloppy. So I like to keep them short if I can.
It was interesting. I think my sessions are normally 5 minutes is a long session for me when I'm working with Phoebe, just thinking about my own dog right now. So I might do 2 minutes. But then I was filling out a time thing recently. When I say time thing, what I mean by that is Veronica Bartelli from Dog Biz. I'm doing some one-on-one coaching with her. She's helping me with making a master plan for how I run Animal Training Academy. Mm-hmm. And she was like, how long do you spend on each task? And I was like, well, I do training, try to do 2 sessions a day. She's like, how long does that take? I'm like, anywhere from 20 minutes to 60 minutes. I'm like, but I'm only doing 2 minute sessions.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like thinking about the training and planning it and then watching the videos back. And so my training time's not short, but learning when I'm with Phoebe, for both of us, we're together implementing, practically applying the review in the planning stage is like minuscule. And it helps keep those loops tight.
Yeah. For me, a strategy I use is I may only do a handful of repetitions of a certain behavior, and then I put some food and like toss some pellets into a bucket, like a reset. So I give them a little food break over here while I like give myself a minute or two to think, reset, and then we go again for a couple more reps. So I'm in the actual training area with the horse for a maximum 10 minutes, but we're not actively like loop after loop after loop after loop for 10 minutes straight, if that makes sense.
It does. I feel like we're doing number two and peeling back the layers of the onion. But looking at the time, I think we're going to head towards wrapping up there. But we did have one last question that we always like to ask everyone, and that is, looking forward, Adele, over the next 5 to 10 years, what would you really like to see more of or happen or new things start to occur in the horse animal training behavior management community, but additionally in the wider positive reinforcement focused animal training community?
Oh, always a big question. In the horse world in particular, I would really love to see people move more towards a mentality of horses being sentient beings, being living, breathing creatures that are that just need information. They need patient trainers that understand them and are really listening to those subtle whispers and not waiting for the yelling or ignoring the yelling. So just seeing a transformation of how equestrians and horse people in general view horses, less of sports equipment or machinery and move more towards their living, breathing creatures that are learning and operating on their environment all the time and have learning histories and are individuals, just giving them more, putting more feel into our relationship with the horses and really focusing on building that relationship with the horse, whether or not they're using, you know, tons of clicker training and all that. Just that mental shift towards looking at the horse as a learning, living, breathing creature is huge. And I would love to see that develop more in the equestrian community over the coming years. For the positive reinforcement, animal training world in general, I've been really excited to see a lot of bridge creating, meaning people that are intentionally creating relationships and connections between trainers that maybe don't always agree on everything, that maybe use different approaches or whatever, and just trying to create dialogue and having just good conversations that are not at each other's throats and develop just very inspiring relationships, whether it's on social media or at conferences, just bringing more people in and expanding our community and helping people feel very welcome into the community, into learning about training this way would be really exciting to me. And I'm already seeing it happen. And I hope to be a big part of that moving forward. I think that's going to make all the difference in the world for our animals is if trainers can be more collaborative and patient with each other and embrace the fact that we're all learning and we're all on our own journeys and trying to do the best we can. And that's kind of what I would love to see going forward is just the continuation of developing that community, a very open community that's welcoming into training animals and training animals in general, not even just with, you know, I'd love to see more pet owners and horse owners that don't consider themselves trainers, realizing that they are in fact training all the time. Like just branching out the idea of who's a trainer, who's training and who's not training, and kind of growing it in a very positive way. So hopefully that makes any sense at all.
I think you might have said my new favorite saying.
Oh.
they are sentient beings who just need information.
Yeah.
I love that. That's going to be the title of this episode.
Okay, great.
And bringing more people together. It's hard. And it's something that ever since talking with Margie Alonso on this show, and conversations I've had with Lily Chin, and others in our community, Lily Chin, I bring her up cause she does such a good job of it with her illustrations. Yeah. Margie Alonso does such a good job of it with her graph of as she gets older, the less ifs she gives. but it's a challenging one to communicate, especially like someone like yourself who has an audience, and then has people who rely on you for good information, and the confusion that can occur when they say, why is it Dow talking to that person? It's a challenging area. I mean, it's something that I want to do more of, don't know how to do more of. I'm like you standing in front of Tiger going, I don't know what to do here.
But it's a really good visual picture.
I know, because it could be something different.
Yes. I mean, I have ideas, but I think we're from... Okay. I'll just tell you my experiences, and I will be honest that I have swung from extremes as far as, like, you know, wishy-washy as far as, like, everybody's, you know, I don't know. I can swing to extremes. I've done it, and I'm trying to find more of that welcoming and encouraging, but also confident in what I believe and what I practice and what I teach. So I don't necessarily have to agree with everybody around me, and that allows me to be really confident in what I do and practice with my own horses and what I teach. But I can still be kind to the people around me. I can still open conversation and I can ask questions. So this is one of my favorite things to do, is ask people questions. When they tell me they train this way or train that way or they do whatever, I ask them why. And usually I can why them all the way down to having a very, like, where they're having to step back and think. Like, why are they actually, like, how is this working? Why is this working? And they may or may not make a decision differently. It may confirm what they're doing. But I feel like asking people questions really opens the door to a mutual conversation versus what tends to happen on social media, is where people are just yelling at each other in very passive aggressive or highly aggressive ways. And embracing that idea that everybody around me is a learner too, and I was once in the same spot, or maybe they're in a different spot and I will be there eventually. I don't know. We're all in different places. It gives me a lot of ability to be really patient and ask those questions and have just a really nice conversation with them. And at the end of the day, I tell them, you know, look, I'm going to share with you what I do. This is what I do. This is why I do it. And they may, and I say, you may or may not agree, and that's totally okay. And I find that oftentimes this plants a seed that later, sometimes years later, I have very specific situations where I have planted a seed on social media, probably a year and a half to 2 years prior to finding out somebody just signed up for one of my courses. So it's a long process for people to embrace something new. Not all the time, but for a lot of people it is. And they have to come to a certain point in their experiences and their journey to be able to make that shift. And sometimes they're just exploring, and that's okay. That's where we all start. But I think I've always struggled with, if I'm talking to these other people, I've struggled with being, how to do that, being very open and talking to other people and being, you know, at least friendly with other people and having those respectful conversations while still really remaining very confident in what I do. And I think what I've realized is that there's a difference between standing on the street corner preaching at people and yelling at people about things, and that's then having a conversation with somebody. And there's a place for everything, but I can still do what I do and believe in what I believe and practice what I practice and share what I do. And I do this all the time on social media, where I am very, very upfront with the fact that I ride bitless or that I use clicker training. This is what I do. If you're interested in it, I will share with you. If you have questions, I will answer any question you have. If you want to talk about why you don't want to do this or whatever, that's fine. But you need to have, we can have a back and forth conversation. I just don't allow on, like, social media platforms or for myself personally, if they want to, you know, face to face or whatever, any sort of coming at me in an aggressive way, that's different than let's have a conversation. So I'm always very open with, I don't really care how you train right now. If you're interested in having a conversation, let's do that. 100%. Let's have a conversation. So yeah, that's just kind of my little, what runs through my head as I'm having conversations with people and trying to reach out to other people. If I can be very open and welcoming to people, I am more likely to create those ripples and plant those seeds versus, you know, just telling people that they're doing things wrong, et cetera. But that's just kind of where I'm at personally. It may change, who knows, but that's where I'm at. And that's, it seems to be working for quite a few people, and for myself included. This is how I transformed to where I am now. It was because of some friends just suggesting, be like, hey, I know this isn't working for you. Have you thought of this? And they were super patient with me as I stumbled around and argued against them. So that was what I needed. And so I want to be that for other people.
But why do you feel like, no, I'm just joking. getting curious, I'm going to frame it like that, embracing the idea that everyone is a learner as well. Mm-hmm. And something we like to say at Animal Training Academy, spreading ripples.
Yes.
No one can
That's
argue
why
it.
I used that word. I used that word specifically because I saw it on the ATA group recently.
You know how to reinforce me, don't you? Hey, once again, thank you for today, sharing everything with us, Adele. Just before we do officially wrap up, though, can you just let everyone listening know where they can go to find out more about you, your offerings, and get in touch?
Yeah. So great place to start is my website. You can pretty much find anything from there. It's thewillingequine.com. And you'll find my podcast on there, YouTube link, my blog. I also have FAQs and stuff, and also my consult services and all that. You can also find me on most any social media platform. I'm on everything, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok even. So those are the two great places to find me. I'm based in Central Texas. I do local training and lessons as well. If you want to reach out to me through my website, I would love to hear from you.
Wonderful. And we will, of course, link to all of this in the show notes. Adele, this double episode has been so much fun, a great way to end 2020 and a great way to start 2021. From myself and on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and hang out with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.